Welcome back to Issues Etc. Greg Kokol is our guest for the remainder of the program. A lot of arguments have been made publicly, privately, out on the street corners, protests being held over Prop 8. It changed, or at least it was an attempt to change, the California Constitution to limit marriage to one man and one woman, effectively banning gay marriage in California. It did pass. And now legal and other efforts are being mounted against it, trying to reverse this decision of the California electorate. Why so much push for gay marriage? What is the debate really, truly all about? Is it about marriage? Is it about homosexuality? Is it about the family? Is it about individual rights? Is it about basic human rights? We're going to be answering some of those questions, and we want your questions and your comments as well. We're coming to you live this Friday, November the 14th. Feel free to give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE or talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Greg Kokol is president of Stand to Reason based in Signal Hill, California, and he's co-author of the book Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. Greg, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Good to talk to you. Thank you.
Greg, your reaction to the protest against Prop 8.
Well, I guess I have to admit it caught me a little by surprise. I realized the other side would not be happy with what the California voters decided. Keep in mind, by the way, that California is the most liberal state in the union, yet a majority of Californians, once again, this is the second time the issue's come up on the ballot, have decided to keep the word marriage as a description of a very particular kind of relationship, that long-term committed relationship between heterosexual couples. And so, you know, you'd like to think that people could be good losers, but that isn't the case here. In fact, it's gone way beyond the pale, because I just had lunch with a pastor here in the area that I live in, Southern California, and he just emailed me. I read it about 5 minutes ago about just notes that are going around among pastors that they expect more demonstrations at their churches this weekend, just like last weekend, where there were people against Prop 8 who were being vicious and obscene. They continue the practice of finding out from the public records people who have given money to the Prop 8, even $100, and they are attacking the employers of these people. They're making them public and saying they're going to punish the employers unless the employers punish people who gave money in support of Prop 8. I mean, this is way beyond the pale. I know that it's common for liberal types to refer to those on the right as kind of fascists and things like that, but that's way overstatement, I think, and not deserved. This is genuinely and properly described as fascistic, the things that are being done here. So I'm a bit surprised at the aggressiveness, though when you consider what's at stake and the people behind it, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised, because we've seen things like this before.
What is it that the advocates of gay marriage really want out of all of this?
Todd, on the no against Prop 8 stickers, it said simply equality for all. And this is what I just saw another one a half an hour ago in a car. They think that this is about equality, or at least this is what they say. And if you don't agree with this step of what they think is equality, then you are just a hate monger. And that's pretty much the way it's been played out here in the propaganda. And I use my words advisedly here. However, same-sex couples in the state of California already have the exact same, and here I'm quoting, rights, protections, and benefits, close quote, as domestic partners in the state of California as married heterosexual couples have. They enjoy all those same benefits, and that is according to law section 297.5 of the California Family Code. So Prop 8 denies them nothing of substance. Everything that they have complained about in the past that they were due and didn't have, they have been given by the state of California by statute. There is only one thing that is being denied them, and that is the word marriage to describe their relationships. And since not a single thing denied same-sex couples in Prop 8, there is not a single thing, brother, but the a declaration of law that their relationships are exactly the same as heterosexual relationships. They have produced temper tantrums, violent demonstrations, vicious attempts to invade the privacy and destroy the personal lives of anyone who supported this Prop 8 campaign. And so what is it that they're getting from this word? They don't get equal rights. They don't get any rights at all from this word marriage. What they get is respect. They desperately want the rest of the culture to declare by law that there is no distinction of any kind between same-sex unions and heterosexual unions. But every single place in the country where the people have a chance to vote about their opinion about that matter, they have voted that there is a distinction between those two. Heterosexual relationships and homosexual relationships or same-sex relationships are not the same from the perspective of the social good. In the same way that, Todd, you're in my friendship, such as it is not the same kind of thing from a perspective of the social good as your relationship with your wife or my relationship with my wife. It is an attempt to make meaningful distinctions about different relationships without at the same time passing any judgment on the nature of those relationships at all. But they can't stand such a thing unless they get complete and unequivocal public approval through the law. Then they're going to hurt people, and that's exactly what they're trying to do now.
Okay, the arguments have been mounted at many different places, and it's leaked over into the media. Keith Olbermann is on MSNBC. He's been leading the charge, at least in that respect, arguing kind of keep your hands off of the whole gay marriage issue. Here he is making an argument that I will summarize as mind your own business.
If you voted for this proposition or you support those who did or the sentiment they expressed, I have some questions because truly I do not understand. Why does this matter to you? What is it to you? In a time of impermanence and fly-by-night relationships, these people over here want the same chance at permanence and happiness that is your option. They don't want to deny you yours. They don't want to take anything away from you. They want what you want, a chance to be a little less alone in the world.
How would you respond to this, Greg?
Well, I looked carefully at the transcript of what Mr. Olbermann has written, and I appreciate his spirit because at least he's not arguing and yelling and screaming at the right in this one. But just listen to the first sentence. Truly, I do not understand. Why does this matter to you? Why? What is it to you? And I actually think he's genuinely befuddled, but here's what's odd about that. Apparently, here's a man who is intelligent, educated, articulate, well-read, and one of the most prominent national news broadcasters and commentators in the country. And he is completely mystified about what possible principled concerns anyone could have against same-sex marriage. Has Keith Olbermann not read a single one of the multitude of thoughtful responses regarding the cultural dangers of same-sex marriage that are just a click away on the Internet? What is he doing for research? Now, I realize he probably wouldn't agree with those views if he read them, but notice his complaint. He doesn't even understand them. What does that tell you about a national news commentator who openly confesses that he can't even understand the other side's view, even though it's been articulated by some of the most lucid minds of our generation? That's the first observation. It's an embarrassing admission that he hasn't done any meaningful homework whatsoever. The second thing is that he's saying, and he's talking about the time of impermanence, fly-by-night relationships, that somehow if we don't give these relationships the name marriage and the cultural and proclaim that they are the equivalent of same-sex marriages, somehow we are abandoning all these people to a twilight zone of meaninglessness in their relationships with others, and they can't have satisfying relationships, or they can't love each other, or somehow we're pushing them out into the cold. Look at, do Susan Sarandon and Tim Robbins have permanence and happiness? As far as I can tell, they do. But they're not married. They have a loving, lifetime commitment to each other that is very public and is very sweet and gracious, from all I can tell. And so do tens of thousands of other, even millions, of heterosexual people who have chosen to eschew marriage because the paper doesn't mean anything. and rather have what they think is a more meaningful relationship without that so-called piece of paper. Now, I don't approve of that, but I'm simply making the point that there are all kinds of people that seem to do very fine without the name marriage. They can have rich and satisfying relationships. They can interact, be in love with each other. They can have permanence to those relationships. Just because we give them a piece of paper that says marriage on it, this doesn't secure them in permanence. In fact, it has been so impermanent by many people's perspective, a point that Keith Olbermann makes in his own piece, that a lot of people have just abandoned marriage altogether. So then how is it he can be arguing now that unless we give them a particular honorific, in a sense, instead of calling them domestic partnerships, which does secure the relationship in a formal sense before society, we have to call them marriage, and unless we give them that particular terminology, they are being denied permanence, and they are stuck in fly-by-night relationships, and they won't have the happiness that we have access to ourselves. I mean, this is the language that he's using.
All right,
this doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Let's take a break, Greg, and when we come back, we'll get some more of Keith Olbermann, his arguments in favor of gay marriage, or really some more of his rhetorical questions for those who voted to ban gay marriage in California. He makes an analogy between interracial marriage and gay marriage. I'm Todd Wilkin, 1-877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. To Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're responding to same-sex marriage arguments made recently by MSNBC's Keith Olbermann. Greg Kokel of Stand to Reason is our guest. It's Friday, November the 14th. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Talkback@issuesetc.org. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Greg, let's get your response to Keith Olbermann again. He's making an analogy between interracial marriage and gay marriage.
I keep hearing this term, redefining marriage. If this country hadn't redefined marriage, black people still couldn't marry white people. 16 states had laws on the books which made that illegal in 1967. 1967, the parents of the president-elect of the United States could not have married in nearly one-third of the states of the country their son grew up to lead. But it's worse than that. If this country had not redefined marriage, some black people still couldn't marry other black people. It is one of the most overlooked and cruelest parts of our sad history of slavery. Marriages were not legally recognized if the people were slaves.
Okay, Greg. First of all, he says we redefined marriage when we decriminalized interracial marriage. Is that true?
Yeah, this is the only point in his entire piece where he makes any attempt to address arguments that were offered by the other side. But he doesn't really deal with the point that they're making, not the substantive point. He just attacks this question of redefining. His point, of course, is that marriage has been redefined in the past, and it needed to be. And then he gives the example of blacks getting married. Let me ask you a question just to lead into my point here. There was a time when women didn't have the vote. A constitutional amendment was passed that made it possible for women's suffrage. Now, my question is, well, I should have asked this first question before I mention that. Does everybody understand what voting is? We all know what voting is. Okay. Was voting redefined when more people were allowed to vote than were allowed to vote before? The answer to that is no. Voting wasn't redefined at all. All that was done was a restriction for some people participating in voting that had a very particular definition was lifted so that they could participate. That's the exact same thing we have here. This is not a redefining of marriage. just as if the passage of the women's suffrage was not a redefining of voting. In fact, this is very clear when he points out that 16 states had laws in the books which made interracial marriage illegal. Notice that if 16 states did, some, 34 states did not. Because they all understood what marriage was, it was the same thing, except for in some states, certain people were excluded from participating. This didn't require a redefinition of marriage. It just simply required a loosening of the restrictions on who could get married. When we take the marriage age, which might be 18 in some states, and we lower it to 16 to include more people who can get married under the law, we're not redefining marriage. We're just simply changing the restrictions that allow people to get married. Now, I'm not at all defending the idea of restricting blacks from being married. That's not my point. My point is that his point, that this is a redefinition, doesn't go through. It's not a redefinition whatsoever. And if that's not a redefinition, then we are not, well, his response is, you can complain about this, a redefinition of marriage, but we redefine marriage all the time. We don't. This is a redefinition because we've changed the fundamental meaning of marriage if what we do is identify same-sex unions as marriages instead of just domestic partnerships. This is something that has never been done in history. We are not doing the changing. They are doing the changing. And so this is not, this has nothing to, listen, same-sex marriage and interracial marriage have nothing in common, Todd. There is no difference, obviously, between a black and a white human being because skin color is morally trivial. There is an enormous difference, I think, obviously, between a man and a woman. Ethnicity has no bearing on marriage. Sex is fundamental to marriage. And what upsets me then is that there is virtually no attempt by Keith Olbermann or anyone else, frankly, to take these concerns or those kinds of points seriously. No attempt to engage the problem of redefinition. And what is the problem of redefinition? Once you say we can redefine marriage to include same-sex couples, there is no principled reason not to redefine it to include anyone else. I mean, I'm talking about polygamy or incestuous unions. I mean, look at in the past, people wouldn't allow incestuous unions either, you know, and now we don't allow it, but they didn't allow interracial unions, so the same argument could be raised there. What about polyandry or polyamory, many husbands, or just group marriages? What then, when we redefine marriage in this case, is the principled reason why these other kinds of relationships wouldn't naturally be allowed for the same reasons? Every single thing that Keith Olbermann has said in his piece applies equally to all of those other things, and that is the danger of redefining marriage, and he never addresses it.
Okay, here's another one from Keith Olbermann of MSNBC. I want your thoughts on this. He says, not allowing gay marriage has led to lots of bad heterosexual marriages and shame.
And uncountable in our history are the number of men and women forced by society into marrying the opposite sex in sham marriages or marriages of convenience or just marriages of not knowing. Centuries of men and women who have lived their lives in shame and unhappiness and who have, through a lie to themselves or others, broken countless other lives of spouses and children, all because we said a man could not marry another man or a woman could not marry another woman. The sanctity of marriage. How many marriages like that have there been? And how on earth do they increase the sanctity of marriage rather than render that term meaningless?
Okay, Greg, this is a little trickier because he seems to be kind of tugging at the whole sanctity of marriage. Don't you really believe in the sanctity of marriage?
Well, yeah, but that's because marriage, I mean, to answer that particular question, Todd, when we say sanctity of marriage, we mean something very particular. We're not relativists there, where you can put any definition into the M-A-R-R-I-A-G-E word. In fact, it wouldn't be sacred if anything could be called a marriage. To be sacred or to be holy means to be set aside or set apart. Marriage is something particular. And so the idea of sacred and marriage fits together. If what we mean by that is it's unique and distinctive, okay? If we open it up so there is no uniqueness or distinction, then it doesn't seem to make any sense to call it sacred or separate or distinct or any holy in any sense. And I'm not trying to import you know, moral concepts in here. I'm just talking about the uniqueness of the thing. So he's saying if you really believe in sanctity of marriage, then you should remove the restrictions that make it sacred or sanctified to begin with. That strikes me as kind of a contradiction. This is an appeal, a playing with words and playing on experiences people had that are meant to tug at our emotions, and I think he's effective in doing that, especially when he makes comments, these kind of broad, sweeping comments like thousands of people were forced by society into relationships they didn't want. Well, I don't know that anybody forced homosexuals to marry the opposite sex. They might have felt compelled by social pressure in some sense. All right, well, why is that the fault of people who believe in heterosexual marriage or marriage is a certain definition? I don't know why that falls on our shoulders. It's like the suggestion is if it's our fault. Nobody was forcing anybody. It's just like back alley abortions. You're forcing people into back alley abortions if you don't allow abortion. Nobody's forcing anybody. It's a choice that they make. They don't have to make that choice. Listen, for thousands of years, people have been in homosexual relationships and stayed in them and enjoyed them and were fulfilled by them in a certain measure. So it isn't like there's no other choice for them but to live a lie, like Oberman is suggesting. Nobody's forcing anything. This question, his suggestions, his solutions, do not in any wise, in any meaningful way, increase the nature of the sanctity of marriage. And the fact that we have some standards for what marriage ought to be for the good of culture, which he never addresses, for the good of children, which he never addresses, he acts like those arguments don't even exist. Rather, we should start hacking away at one of the foundational institutions of civilizations, because in the past, he thinks some people lived in unhappy relationships being married to heterosexuals when they were really homosexuals. That's his argument. That's what it amounts to.
Daniel in Iowa City writes this: if sexual orientation is the issue, then what's preventing those who claim to be bisexual from marrying a person from each gender? Should they be allowed to marry multiple people?
Well, I think Keith Olbermann's answer would have to be yes, and I only say this not because he's addressed it, but because of the arguments that he's offered. What was just described just a moment ago about forcing people into relationships that they don't want, they're unhappy into, that would apply here. Living in shame and unhappiness and in secrecy, that is, for somebody who loves two people who happen to be members of the opposite sex, that would apply here. The argument about interracial marriage would apply equally here. In other words, the thing about redefining marriage would apply here. Who are we to say that a marriage is just for two people? Why not three or four or more?
30
Why
seconds.
Why not mixing it up?
Okay, when we come back from this break, we've got some more to play from Keith Olbermann of MSNBC. He says same-sex marriage is really about love. And what business does the state have dealing with love? Greg Kokel is our guest. He's president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org.
Everyone is going to lose their soul.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, 10 minutes left with Greg Kokel, president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, co-author of the book Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Mid-Air. We're talking about same-sex marriage, responding to Keith Olbermann's arguments that he made recently on MSNBC in favor of gay marriage. You'll find a link to Greg Kokel and to Stand to Reason under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Greg, let's listen to one comment made by MSNBC's Keith Olbermann. He says that same-sex marriage is really about love.
You want to sanctify marriage? You want to honor your God and the universal love you believe he represents? Then spread happiness, this tiny, symbolic, semantical grain of happiness. Share it with all those who seek it. Quote me anything from your religious leader or book of choice telling you to stand against this. and then tell me how you can believe both that statement and another statement, and another one which reads only, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You are asked now by your country, perhaps by your Creator, to stand on one side or another. You are asked now to stand not on a question of politics, not a question of religion, not on a question of gay or straight. You are asked now to stand on a question of love. All you need to do is stand and let the tiny ember of love meet its own fate.
What do you make of his use of Jesus' words, do unto others as you would have them do unto you?
Well, obviously Jesus didn't mean that what we ought to be doing is giving freedom to others, to encouraging other people to do something that's bad, even if we want it for ourselves. We can mistakenly want bad things for ourselves, but that wouldn't be something that would receive Jesus his approval. Because the New Testament is absolutely thick with things, is even in the teachings of Jesus, which that we should not be doing. And so it isn't as if there is this unqualified ethic that Jesus is offering, simply do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Part of my response to Keith Olbermann could be, well, you know what? Knowing what I know, I would not want, if I were a same-sex person, if I was in a same-sex relationship, I would not want you to extend the same definition of marriage to my relationship as to a heterosexual relationship. I would not want that because I don't think that would be good for society. I have all of the same rights, privileges, and protections that the heterosexual couples have, but to retool society is not a good thing. So even if I were homosexual, I would say I don't want this. And there are homosexuals who do this. Who are in favor of things like Prop 8, even though they count themselves among the homosexuals. So it isn't clear that simply citing Jesus' statement is going to get for him what he wants. In any event, you can't cite Jesus against the morality that Jesus himself proposed. He told the woman, go and sin no more, who was caught in adultery, you know. 1 Corinthians 13, which is the love chapter, which I saw in the San Francisco paper, quote, with regards to Prop 8, that is, quote, on behalf of the homosexual view, the greatest of these is love. That passage says love does not rejoice in unrighteousness. When love rejoices in that which is wrong, then it is not real love. It is misguided passion or misguided sentiment, but it's not really love. Even love has to be properly informed. And what Keith Olbermann is doing is he's just simply playing on emotions at this particular point, and trying to argue that if you don't, that the loving thing is to acknowledge these relationships, and if you don't, then somehow you are not letting the spark of love grow. I mean, this is nonsense, though. These relationships that same-sex couples have, they have been celebrating them for years as wonderful and satisfying and fully rich, enriched by their love for one another. Nobody is stopping anyone from loving. That's the first point. The second point is marriage isn't about love. Ask any married person. It isn't about love. C.S. Lewis makes the point that when you get married, you make a commitment to stay together even when love isn't there. Because if it was just about love and you stayed in love, you wouldn't need the vow. This demonstrates that marriages are about something deeper and more profound than just merely sentiment. And in fact, if marriage were about love, there'd be millions of people around the globe who thought they were married, and they're not. Frankly, when he intimates that government should get out of the private business of loving, I agree with him. If same-sex couples don't want the government weighing in on their relationships, they shouldn't be demanding that a government pass laws to approve their relationships. My view is simply this: let the government stay out of those relationships that aren't central and vital to society. Now, and here's another point, but I don't know how much time we have left. Do I got about a minute and a half to make another statement on this, Todd?
Yeah, how about a minute?
Okay, a minute. Marriage is a word that is used to describe the long-term natural unions between a man and a woman, and that this union forms the foundational unit of civilization called family. Now, look, no other human relationship does that. that's why other relationships have been given other words to describe them, like friends or lovers or partners or domestic partners. These terms do not demean or diminish those relationships in any way, Todd. It merely recognizes the different nature of these relationships and the distinct function each of them has in the culture as a whole. And if we did not have marriage between a husband and a wife, a man and a woman, as something distinct from everything else, this would undermine culture, because that relationship as a group, as a rule, by nature, and I think by design, produces something no other relationship does, and that is the next generation. And so the government has an interest in protecting it and rewarding it and privileging it. All the rest of the relationships, the government can say, well, whatever, fine, hands off. That's what is being denied here. Same-sex couples want the government, that is the people, to give public approval to their relationships as if they were heterosexual relationships. And they are not. They don't fulfill the same function. And that's why it's vital for us to keep them distinct.
Okay, we only have a few minutes left. We have a couple email to deal with, so let's keep our response brief.
Okay.
Matt in Nebraska says, often we heard homosexuals and others say that they wanted the government out of their bedroom. The cry is always tolerance at first, and then it leads to acceptance, and finally to the dominance of non-traditional relationships.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds ridiculous, but how could the state eventually demand that pastors not discriminate against any couple seeking marriage? Is it possible that government-approved relationships will become a thing of the past?
Well, I think that concern that he's raised is a possibility. If you look at abortion, you know, before it was people want to have a choice to get an abortion, and now doctors are losing their rights not to give them. Even if you have objections against abortion for moral reasons, legislation is pressing on them to say you must give an abortion even if you think it kills a human being. And so by parallel, I think the same thing could happen here. And we've seen worse scenarios play themselves out in other places, other countries where this has happened, so I think it's a legitimate fear.
Scott in Oakwood, Illinois, has two questions. One, do Prop 8 protesters think that they're going to get anywhere by obscene and lewd demonstrations? How is this not shooting themselves in the foot?
Well, that's a great observation. You would hope that, first of all that they're doing is being covered by national media, which I don't have the confidence it is, but and that people who look at this would then draw the right conclusions about that group, and I don't have the confidence they always will do that either. So it may be shooting themselves in the foot, but it may turn out to have no impact in the negative at all on them. We'll see.
The second question from Scott in Oakwood, Illinois. If there were a nationwide law that legitimize same-sex marriage, what would be the gay lobby's next target? What would it mean for the civil liberties of those who speak out against homosexual behavior? What about religious freedom? About 30 seconds to respond.
Yeah, I think that's a very serious concern. All I have to do is look at states like Massachusetts, who for a number of years now have had same-sex marriages, and to see what the laws are doing now to impose this on schools and teaching your kids and how you can't intercede, and then pretty soon it's going to be, if you don't do what the law says you do about this, then you're going to get jailed. I think that's a serious impediment to free speech and free action there.
Greg Kokel is a regular guest, president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, co-author of the book Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. Greg, thank you for being our guest.
Yeah, thanks for the time together with you, Todd. I look forward to the next time.
Folks, when you surf the web this weekend, go to issuesetc.org, click On Demand, and check out the website for Greg Kokel and Stand to Reason. Greg Kokel and Stand to Reason at our website, issuesetc.org. The church has a word to speak into this situation. First of all, to say that the things that are being called for here are wrong, but also to say that there are neighbors at stake. The neighbors here are our homosexual neighbors who may believe it's the best thing for them to get married and perpetuate and legitimate their lifestyle, their moral choice, their sexual orientation, and it is harming them to affirm them in their wrongdoing. There are children at stake because, of course, children are the natural product of regular marriage. And what becomes of children where marriage is redefined into anything you want it to be? And the third set of neighbors that are at stake are everyone else, society. Marriage is good. It's not just a good gift of God. We know this from God's word. It's a good. It's a social good, even though it may be abused. It brings into being the next generation, and it fosters all of us to function in society. Let's think about our neighbor. Think about the ones that most need our help when we consider questions like gay marriage. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk to you again Monday. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.